It was more than a decade ago that Eloise Cobell, a leader of the Blackfoot Indian tribe in Montana, filed a lawsuit against the federal government. Her claim charged that the government had mismanaged the land leases of more than a half million Indians across America whose individual properties are held in trust for them by the Department of Interior. Revenues generated by mining, oil and gas extraction, and timber operatives, for example, were supposed to pay dividends to Indian landowners. But that hasn't happened. Now a federal judge in Washington is set to determine how much Indian plaintiffs will receive from leases that have been held by the government for more than a century. The United States has not kept accurate records, but Indian plaintiffs, led by Cobell, believe the amount comes to at least $58 billion. And she joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. It's wonderful to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the trial. And I guess right now it's in a critical phase.
Yes, it is. We're entering into the final stages of our case. And as you know, it's been over 12 years, and it's almost impossible to think about that it would take this long. Mm-hmm. But the first part of our case was to prove that the United States government needed to fix the systems and basically compel them to fix the systems. And in my real life, I'm a banker, so I understand that if you're managing money and if you have broken systems, then you don't have to sue to do that. You know, you're forced to do it or you're shut down or sent to jail. But we had to go to trial to compel the United States government to fix their accounting systems. And we won that in early 1999, 2000. And then the second part of our case was to give individual Indian beneficiaries who the government is the trustee, to give them an accounting.
Let me stop you for just a minute because I want to get a little bit of the backstory about this, about why the lands were put in trust in the first place.
Well, way back when the Indians were forced on Indian reservations, and I'll use my tribe as an example, the Blackfeet Nation encompassed all of Montana into Wyoming into Canada. And of course, the government wanted more and more control of Indian land. And as a result, they pushed the Blackfeet up to sort of a postage size stamp into Montana, which we ended up with 1.5 million acres. Well, still, that wasn't enough for non-Indian settlers moving west. So these senators, they called Senator Dawes, who called themselves the Friends of the Indians. And basically, they wanted more and more control of Indian land. And so they enacted what is called the Dawes Act, or as we refer to it as the Allotment Act. This particular act took land that already belonged to Indian people held in common by the tribe and parceled it up to individual Indians because they wanted to assimilate us into the real world and make us all, what they said in the act was to make us all farmers and try to forget our Indianness. And so they ended up with these parcels of land, and then as a result, there was all these very suspicious and fraudulent deals that was made with individual Indian lands because people could not control how the government managed this property, mm-hmm. and they would take revenue off of the property. Most of the leases went to non-Indian oil companies, non-Indian timber companies, and so the individual Indians were just really not receiving their money off of this land.
Because as it was, the government was supposed to manage and then provide whatever money that they received, and you were supposed to get that in return.
That's correct.
I wondered how, when you first brought this up, why you thought the lawsuit was the only option. Had you approached people before and tried to point this out, or what kind of steps had you taken before the lawsuit?
When we had first determined that the government couldn't account for our money, and basically we had to go to Congress, and with the help of Congress, we were able to get money appropriated for an accounting, and that was in 1989. The government hired a huge accounting firm, and they went out and said, you know, this is such a mess. It's unbelievable. There's no way we can give an accounting. And so with these facts from the accounting firm, I started approaching the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs. I don't know how many times I've testified before Congress exposing all the horrible problems that existed within the individual Indian funds. And it was very difficult for them to listen. It was like, you know, they would get all excited for about 5 minutes and then nothing would happen. So
can you I was just going to ask, can you tell me about the dividend itself? How much is it supposed to pay, and how often?
The money that comes off of the Indian people's lands and resources.
It would be different amounts?
Yes, it's different amounts because it comes from oil and gas and timber and minerals, hard rock minerals, and agricultural lands. At different times, people would be getting different amounts of money, but there were times they would see oil wells pumping on their lands and they wouldn't get any money. I don't think that any other race of people would have to file this lawsuit. But we had to.
And the case right now, explain where we are right now with the trial and the case.
We are in the last part of the, like I said, there's three different parts of this. Mm-hmm. And we've won the first two, which was fixing the accounting, compelling the United States government to fix the accounting systems, although they haven't, even though we won that. The second part was the accounting, and the judge has determined it's impossible to give an accounting. And the last phase is this phase, the monetary recovery. What is the number and how much is owed individual Indian people? And we have put the $58 billion forward as what we know is owed individual Indian people.
And if a number is determined, then what happens with that?
Well, I'm sure that the judge and the court system will have ways to deal with that. Probably, I would think that the judge would appoint a special master and an overview and determine how the money would be distributed to individual Indians. But we've got to remember it's for over 500,000 individual Indians that need to have a restitution made to them. So there will be ways, but you know, I don't worry about that. I worry about getting that money out of Treasury and put aside for individual Indian people because it's their money.
You said that you think that this wouldn't happen with any other race. Why do you think that?
Because there are laws, banking laws, regulators that regulate national banks that manage money for people. And if you are out of compliance or can't do any accounting, it's not up to the individual Indian beneficiary to prove it. The burden of proof is not on you. It's on that particular bank. And there are regulators that make sure, United States regulators that make sure that your money is managed properly. But when the shoe's on the other foot and the United States government is managing money, they don't have any laws, no laws whatsoever. This money is supposed to be held in trust to the highest fiduciary standards, and nobody has held the Department of Interior or the Department of Treasury accountable for the money. Look, they got away from 1887 forward with not ever having a reconciliation or an audit, absolutely nothing. So they really took advantage of Native people, individual Indian beneficiaries. They were in a position to take advantage of them, and they did.
Eloise Cobell, Executive Director of the Native American Community Development Corporation and lead plaintiff in a lawsuit against the federal government for an accounting of billions of dollars in Indian trust funds. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for having me here today.